You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
Susie Hunt.
And we have a reoccurring character joining us today.
A reoccurring character who has a bone to pick with this podcast. Bone to pick. You guys go and do a Jeffrey Combs movie without me? How dare you? It don't matter that I completely forgot he was in that piece of shit movie. It don't matter. Did it without me. Damn you people.
You know, it's funny because like I said, when we were recording that, I was like, you know, I wonder if Don's going to have something to say about this.
You know what? Since we're on a rant right now, hold on. I have a bone to pick with Count Creepyhead, too. And I know you're listening, Omay. Everybody knows it was Punky's best friend, Cherry, and the fridge. I don't want to hear you mistaking it and then trying to call me out on your pocket. I'm going to call you out when you do something dumb like that. Hi, Mike.
Podcast synergy. Yay.
Hi, Pope. My dog just walked over like, why are you yelling? What are you yelling about? Hi, it's Don. Hi, and my dog Poe, if you can hear him. He just licked the microphone. Okay.
Well, we're here to start our new month of movies. We're kicking it off with episode 109, Identity, from 2003. It's an hour and 30 minutes, directed by James Mangold, who we would know from Girl Interrupted, Walk the Line, The Wolverine, Logan, Ford vs. Ferrari, and the upcoming Indiana Jones 5. So let's go around the table and see what everyone thinks about this this little flick here. Don, as you're our guest, it's customary we start with you. What are your thoughts?
Well, let's see. I apologize. My dog is barking, so I am moving through the house, people, to get away from him.
I actually can't hear him.
Yeah, I can't either, so that's good.
And he, of course, followed me into the room before I could shut the door. Okay. This will be fun for the Patreon. Fun for the Patreon, people. Sorry, dog. Okay. I'm in a room now. So, the question was...
What are your thoughts on this film?
My thoughts on this film. I enjoyed this film. I liked it. I did. But watching it critically for this... Holy crap. Like, there are so many twists in this fucking movie that it should have been called M. Night Shyamalan Directs a Scoliosis Exam. All right. Like, Jesus fucking Christ. No, it's not this person. It's this person. No, it's been fake all along. Like, oh my God. Like, they didn't need this whole side story of it being a DID, you know, thing, or they call it by something else in here because it's called DID now. I know that. But it's like, that could have been a whole different kind of movie. I mean, but yeah, I guess it's called Identity, you know, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I mean, I do like the movie. It doesn't hold up, in my opinion. But it's just because I was watching it critically. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, you annoy me. You're stupid. I believe Amanda Peet went to the, and I'm going to call this back, the Jennifer Love Hewitt School of Acting.
Yes.
Of having to scream, what is wrong with you people? Or something like, yeah.
I have that actually in my notes later.
Yeah. And even like, and I love John Cusack. And even in this, I'm like, what the fuck? You're such a dick in this movie. Like, I don't know why Ray Liotta's the only one I think I kind of liked in the movie. And maybe even not that. It's just...
And normally he plays a dick, so.
Yeah. Moving on.
So not a fan overall anymore.
Yeah, I will say if I wasn't watching it critically, I probably would still be a fan of it. To be honest, it's not. I'm not gonna say I'm never gonna watch it again. I probably will, you know, and I probably will just see all the stuff I've been calling out kind of thing. Like now, like
that's.
Oh.
That's the one unfortunate thing about watching anything critically is like once you notice it, you can't put that back in the box. Like once you see it, it's like, oh shit. It's kind of like
never unsee it.
Years and years ago, Judah had kind of like pointed out to me that Rob Zombie says yeah like every 5 seconds in every one of his songs, and I'm like, no, he did. Wait, no. Then it's like I can't unhear it now. So yeah.
Holy shit, Maurice is here. Hi, Maurice.
Well, Maurice, we'll toss it over to you. What are your thoughts on this?
I like this movie. I actually think I saw it in the theater when it came out, surprisingly. Seems like every time we do a movie, I have not seen it in the theater. But no, I've always liked this movie, and I really like the twist. I mean, you can kind of see something coming, but you can't. Well, the ending. But no, it really, for whodunit, it really keeps you guessing. And the acting is, you know, a lot of good actors. Mm-hmm. The cast is great. I actually like John Cusack's character. I don't think I like Ray Liotta, but he's always the bad guy, and he was the bad guy in this one.
Yep.
If there was anything I didn't like, it was the whininess of Clea DuVall. Or Clea DuVall, it was too emo. Nobody whines that bad.
She does, apparently.
Or that much. But not enough for me not to like the movie. But, or, you know, not, you know, to take anything away from the movie, rather. But, yeah, it really, it was a buzzkill. I mean, you have Gary Busey in it, right? No, I'm just kidding.
Baby Busey.
You know, that might be the second part of the movie is like he is not a good actor.
No.
I can't say other than those two because I like Clea DuVall as an actress. I like her movies, but other than those two, the acting was really good.
Yeah.
And we have Dr. Octopus before he was Dr. Octopus.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Malik
Octopus.
Dr. Otto Malik.
Overall good movie. I'd recommend it if somebody wanted to watch a good whodunit movie.
Yeah. Well, Susie, what are your thoughts on this?
I agree with Maurice on this one. I definitely, and you know what's coming, my infamous Black Christmas imitation, because that definitely happens in this movie. But I don't think I saw this movie in the theater, but I definitely remember renting it at Blockbuster because I love John Cusack. Yeah. And it is just really an overall fantastic cast, with the exception of Bibi Busey. And it does keep you guessing. And I haven't seen it in so long that I remembered the end, like the twist at the very end. But I didn't remember how annoying Ginny is. And I do love Clea DuVall. I love everything that she does. Like, but I'm a cheerleader. She was great in that. I can't think of any other movies that she's in off the top of my head. But I just think it's a really good whodunit. I really do like John Cusack's character. The one thing for me, though, and this is any time I watch this movie, and I've seen it more than once, the only characters I actually remember their names are Larry, Ed, Rhodes, Ginny, and Lou. That's it. Like, I had to write it down. Caroline Suzanne. Mm. I just kept calling her the hand that rocks the cradle. Like the stepdad. I mean, oh, and Timmy. How can you forget Timmy? Right. And the stepdad, I kept calling him Scrubs. But I mean, I like it. Like Maurice said, I think it's a really good whodunit. It keeps you guessing. And I think it's a well done movie. I would definitely watch it again.
Well, I think Dawn, you're going to be odd one out on this one. Cause I love this movie. I saw it in the theater and, I remember I went in completely blind other than I knew that it was a great cast. So I'm like, let's go see this. Me and Jess went to go see it in the theater. And I remember Jess not liking it nearly as much as me, but, I've liked this movie ever since then. I've seen it a lot over the last few years. It is a little janky in parts, like the plot twists, you know, the constant twisting is, it does get a little old if you're watching it critically, but overall, I really enjoy this film. I love John Cusack's performance. I love, what's his name? The guy who plays Malcolm. Oh my God.
Owen Taylor Vince.
Yes.
Malcolm. I thought you said Malik. Yes.
No. Malcolm, he's amazing. Like, I love that guy and everything. I can't really complain about any of the actors. Like, even Baby Busey did exactly what I want Baby Busey to do and act like a lunatic.
Yep.
You know,
I think that's only how Baby Busey knows how to act.
Right. So I'm I got exactly what I was hoping for from him. But I will agree that Ginny is annoying as hell. So her, we'll get to it, but where she ends up made me laugh a lot because of the annoyance.
I forgot to mention, like, I haven't watched this whole movie in one sitting in like years. Every time it seems to be on, it always is like picks up right after, you know, he escapes, like the Baby Busey escapes, and then I watch it from there. So maybe that even had some influence on me too, that I totally forgot about this whole beginning part, you know, kind of thing. Because I forgot Rebecca De Mornay was in this movie.
Hand that rocks the cradle.
And I haven't seen her since.
That's because they really killed her.
Yeah.
But no, overall, I really enjoy this film and would definitely highly recommend it for anyone who wants to watch a good whodunit. Because let's be honest here, the whole point of a good whodunit is to keep you guessing throughout the movie and give you plenty of red herrings. And this movie does not fail to deliver on that. But let's go through the massive cast. I wrote down a lot of people because a lot of people are main players in this. So starting off, we have Ed, played by John Cusack. Obviously, we know him. 16 Candles, Better Off Dead, Stand By Me, One Crazy Summer, Gross Point Blank, which in my notes, apparently I misspelled as Goose Point Blank, which I kind of want to see now. High Fidelity being John Malkovich, 1408, which is another one I'd love to get on here. The Hot Tub Time Machine movies, and Stephen King's The Cell, which, great story, horrible movie. Great casting, but horrible movie. Also, 2012, which we have another actor from that in here. Then we have Rhodes, played by Ray Liotta, obviously Goodfellas, No Escape, Muppets from Space, Hannibal, Blow, ER, and most recently, Hubby Halloween, which, you know, it's honestly a good movie. It's stupid, but it's funny.
Oh, Hubie Halloween.
Or Hubie, yeah. Hubie,
yeah, the Adam Sandler one. Yeah, it actually is way better than I expected it to be.
Right. I did not really have any desire to see that, but I was looking for a Halloween movie to watch with Caleb, and we put that on, and we both laughed our butts off. Like, I thought it was really funny. But then we have Paris, played by Amanda Peet. Seinfeld, The Whole Nine Yards. Saving Silverman, The Whole 10 Yards. The X, which is a great movie that I hope we get on here one day. The X-Files, I Want to Believe, and 2012. Then we have Larry, played by John Hawkes, who we just saw in I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. We also saw him in From Dusk Till Dawn. He's in Freaked, Congo, Night of the Scarecrow, Eastbound and Down, The X-Files, Deadwood, Lost. He's in a lot of stuff. Dr. Malik, played by Alfred Molina. We would know him from Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, Lady Hawk, Species, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Spider-Man 2. Then he does a bunch of voice acting work for Axe Cop, Gravity Falls, Harley Quinn, And he's in the upcoming Spider-Man No Way Home, which I cannot wait to see. Then we have Ginny, played by Clea DuVall. Can't hardly wait. We already saw her once in The Faculty. She's in She's All That, The Astronaut's Wife, which is another really good flick. Girl Interrupted, Ghosts of Mars, which is god-awful. The Grudge, Heroes, American Horror Story, and The Handmaid's Tale. And we have George York, played by John C. McGinley.
Scrubs!
Yep, Scrubs. That's where most of us will know him from.
I was going to say, I don't think we need to list anything else, because I think that's only what people will know him from.
Right.
But he's in so many other good, like Stand Against Evil. Have you guys seen that show?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I love that's fantastic. Evil. The Belko Experiment. I really want to cover that movie on
here. Oh, yeah. That was a good one.
I loved that. Office Space. How can we not? You know, I mean, come on.
Right.
I'm gonna need you to turn in that TPS report. But he's in a bunch of stuff. He also does a lot of great voice work, like on King of the Hill and The Boondocks. Really good actor. He's also in Seven. Then Lou, played by William Lee Scott. We would know him from Gattaca, Gone in 60 Seconds, Pearl Harbor, and the Butterfly Effect. Butterfly? Yeah, I can speak.
You're a butterfly, sugar baby.
Oh, God, Crazy Town. I forgot about them.
Oh, I thought that's where you were going with that.
No.
No one wants to go with that.
Mike did.
Oh, hell no. We have Robert Main, played by Jake Busey, also known as Bebe Busey. We would know him from Tales from the Crypt, Sunrise Party, Twister, The Frighteners, which is where we last saw him, Starship Troopers, Nazis at the Center of the Earth, the From Dusk Till Dawn series, which he's really good in that, actually. Stranger Things, The Predator, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Swamp Thing. Then we have Malcolm Rivers, played by Pruitt Taylor Vince. Angel Heart, Mississippi Burning, Jacob's Ladder, Quantum Leap, Natural Born Killers, The Cell, Monster, Constantine, The Walking Dead, bunches of The Devil's Candy, which I would love to get on here. Stranger Things, The Bird Box, that frickin' Netflix horror movie that everyone's talking about.
That was so good.
I never watched it, honestly. I still haven't
watched it either.
I never got around to it. Then we have Caroline Suzanne, played by Rebecca De Mornay. As you were saying, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Risky Business, Murders at the Rue Morgue, Backdraft, the TV version of The Shining, which I know it gets a lot of crap, but I loved that. She's in the remake of Mother's Day, which is pretty twisted. Then Jessica Jones and Lucifer. We have Alice York, played by Leela Kensel. The Golden Girls, 30-something, Friends, Duckman, The Nanny, Mad About You, and The Hot Chick. And then Timmy York, played by Brett Lohr. Malcolm in the Middle, ER, Medium, and Raising Hope. Now, there was a lot more people in here, but they were minor players or only in the courtroom scenes. And I honestly got sick of writing down the cast because it's a lot of friggin' people in this movie. So if they only had one or two scenes, I didn't put them in. But the plot of this film, for anyone who hasn't seen it, is stranded at a desolate Nevada motel during a nasty rainstorm. 10 strangers become acquainted with each other when they realize that they're being killed off one by one. So, dun dun dun, who done it?
Who done done it?
Who gone done it?
Oh well, if you guys want to know, I can tell you.
No,
I mean we don't have to go through the whole movie.
And this is the shortest episode of the Boogeyman Closet ever. But we open with the credits. We hear thunder like in the background and a narrator that says, "As I was going up the stair, I met a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. I wish he'd go away." We cut in close on a tape being played, and on the tape it says Malcolm Rivers. We hear a doctor talking to a man, asking him questions about his past while we see files and photos of Malcolm, along with like crude stick figure drawings of dead people. The doctor asks him about his mother, and we see arrest photos of her for prostitution. Malcolm tells his doctor, "I remember my mom was a whore." Then we see Dr. Malik going through files and listening to recordings of Malcolm, like kind of fast forwarding through. He holds up news clippings that state boy abandoned at a local motel. On the tape, we hear him ask, "How long were you there?" Malcolm answers, "As long as she was busy." So clearly Malcolm had a pretty fucked up childhood. We see more articles, Malcolm becoming a ward of the state, mass killings tied to Malcolm. We see arrest photos. On the tape, Malik asks, "Do you know why you're talking with me now?" Malcolm answers him, yeah, you're supposed to be good with headaches. I need something more than aspirin. Then Malik asks Malcolm if... that's going to confuse me, the Malik and Malcolm, the two M names. Malik asks Malcolm if he remembers the murders, and he tells him that he remembers that Columbia is the capital of South Carolina. Then Malik fast-forwards the tape, and we hear Malcolm talking in Spanish. Malik asks, are you the person who murdered six residents at the Lakewood Apartments on May 10th, 1998? Malcolm tells him, that's my birthday. We see more articles that that they tried for an insanity plea, which he was denied, and Malcolm is facing the death penalty. On the tape, Malik asks, who am I speaking with right now? What should I call you? And he tells him, call me whatever you want. And then I was just like, wow, that little opening, if you've seen the movie, that little opening gives away everything.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, if you've never come into this movie before, it's like, wow, there's a lot going on here. But yeah, it tells you the entire twist right there. But we cut to a district attorney getting a phone call from the assistant district attorney who tells him that the suppressed evidence was found in the Malcolm Rivers case. And due to that, the state is allowing a new hearing for the defense to argue insanity once more. They needed Rivers at the hearing, so they pumped him full of drugs, got him on a prison transport, and sent him off to the hearing the night before his execution. Now we cut to the aptly named motel. It's just called Motel, which cracked me up. I mean, it
Hotel,
makes sense.
Hotel, Motel, Holiday Inn.
It's definitely a no-tell motel. But a car arrives at the motel. George York comes in holding his wife, Alice York, who is bleeding, and begs the clerk, Larry, to help him, stating they were in an accident and he can't stop the bleeding. Now we cut to a flashback of the Yorks on the road. They hit something, blow a tire. George is particularly meticulous when pulling over. He's like, hands 10 and 2, slowly pump the brakes. Like, he's just reciting all this stuff.
He has Asperger's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And again, this Scrubs, we'll just call him. He's a damn good actor.
Oh, yeah.
But so he pulls over on the side of the road. He gets out, checks the tire, and it was punctured by a high heel. So now we cut to Paris driving along a stretch of road going to light a smoke. She looks around, can't find her lighter, thinks back to where she last had it. Now we cut to her dolled up in a hotel room with a nerdy half-naked businessman tied to a bed with whipped cream and candles on his chest.
It's his birthday.
Apparently.
Go oldie. It's the birthday. That's actually really kind of gross too.
Yeah. Yeah. All that. Bleh. All that whipped cream on him? No.
Well, she got paid pretty damn good.
Well, yeah, she did. But she lights the candles and sings for He's a Jolly Good Fellow to him. And then she remembers putting the lighter back in her bag, and we cut back to her driving. She opens her bag up in the back seat, which immediately starts spewing clothes along the road, including the high heel that punctured the York's tire.
Why didn't she just stop and pick up all that junk? Like, why?
Right? Just like, I don't need it now.
Yeah.
She was in a hurry to get down, like, to her orange grove.
You obviously are like, oh my god, everything's flying out. Oh, no, obviously I'm driving. I can't stop. It's gone forever.
And this is the other thing that bugged me about that car. It's a convertible with no possible way to put up a top.
Yep, you know, as we see a little further along.
Right, I'm like, why is there no way to... Okay, like, did someone just tear it off? Like, what happened? But back to the Yorks changing their tire on the side of the road. Timmy York is in the car and gets his mom's attention, and they start playing on opposite sides of the window, mimicking each other. Timmy backs up, mom backs up, and then suddenly, bam, is hit by a car.
Okay, why the hell is she standing in the middle of the road during the rainstorm?
Because she's dumb.
Okay. She wanted to reassure her husband that everything would be okay.
And that he bought a shitty spare tire.
Yes. Yeah. She was bitching out about the spare tire. But George flips.
And open. Scrubs is just like, I want to go back to the blue room.
I mean, that's not wrong. So she gets hit by the car, George freaks out, and then we cut to the limo that hit her in the rain. Ed is driving, like, we get a little flashback. Ed is driving the limo, and we see Carolyn Suzanne in the back of the limo talking on her phone to her manager, telling her that she walked off set, bitching that they had her staying at a Ramada. Oh, the horror. Mm. So her phone begins to go dead, and she tells Ed that her spare battery is in the bag up front. I'm like, why is her luggage next to the driver and not in the trunk?
Like, and then he goes, what bag? She goes, the Louis Vuitton.
Because she's a real fucking bitch, that's why.
She is a real fucking bitch.
I'm glad you said it, Maurice, because I have right here, I bet someone's going to call her a real fucking bitch.
And then she says, just use your fucking eyes, because he can't find it.
Yep.
And after hearing that, I was like, yep, she's a real fucking bitch. I knew it. I could tell.
He's like, I can smell him a mile away. But yeah, so he can't find the battery, you know, she's screaming at him. He looks down and then boom, he hits Alice York. So Carolyn then tries to bitch at Ed and tells him, like, don't go out there. If you go out there, you're assuming responsibility. Like, you bitch. And he's like,
and he's like, I hit her.
Yeah, he goes, it is my responsibility. So he goes to check things out. George is just freaking out. Ed tries to get the phone from Carolyn.
What'd you do? What did you do?
I love this because Ed tries to get the phone from Carolyn, and she's like, no. Like, she just won't open her window.
He's like, give me the goddamn phone. It.
He calmly picks up the tire iron and just breaks the fuck out of it.
Good for him.
And then, you know, he grabs her phone, and she's like, it's dead. And then he tries it, and of course it is dead. So we cut to Paris coming to a full stop in the road where it's badly flooded and completely impassable. She backs up, hits a street light, and I was like, why does this convertible not have a top? It's like pouring rain. She's
I wrote that. I go, why is she still driving with the top down, you dumb dumb?
Then we cut to the limo pulling up in front of the motel and then back to George coming in with Alice. So Ed brings in Timmy. Timmy.
Yep.
And he tells Larry to call for help. Larry tries, but the phone is out. He tells him that that happens sometimes when the rain gets bad. Larry tells him that, Larry tells him that they can get help about 30 miles away. There's a hospital. So Ed goes out to the car. I love this part. He throws Carolyn's luggage on the sidewalk and tells her she's staying there too. She flips out telling him that, you know, this doesn't work, or that she works for him and she's not going to stay here and blah, blah, blah.
He works for her.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He works for us. I said that wrong.
He says it's a step down from the Ramada, but it'll do.
Mm-hmm. But I love it when she's bitching. He just picks her up and sets her on the sidewalk like Fred Flintstone putting out the cat. Like, yep. And then she goes on. She's like, I understand the bleeding woman has a medical condition, but so do I. My lungs have depleted cilia, and if I stay here, I could asphyxiate. I'm like, I bet that's why so many people can't wear masks. They have depleted cilia.
Oh my God.
Damn it. They've all seen this movie. Or at least up to that point.
And they're all having their chiropractors write them an excuse for it.
Oh my God.
Oh, but
I
that's
pretty much hate life. Everybody. Except you guys and a few other people.
Oh, you know,
you know what? I'm going to take us on a little side story here, actually. And I'm going to actually talk about my dad, because he is one of those people in a hospital that people hate because he's like, go to the son of a bitch, blah, 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 get me out of here. So he needs a sitter in the room with him at all times, which is fun. So most of them are awesome, but there was one who came in and it was 2 days in a row and I wanted to strangle her because she's talking about how her whole family is not, like, automatically, like, we're friends, like how her whole family isn't getting the injections and vaccines, and now her sister has COVID, but she survived, but now her ex-husband, who is also her baby daddy, because they had the baby after they got divorced. Oh my God, it was a whole story. And he's in a wheelchair, and he's not getting it because she survived, so why should he get it? You know, oh my God. Like, oh. I left the room. I'm like, I'm going home now. And I warned my brother because she did do it two nights in a row. She was there two nights in a row. And my brother was coming in to see my dad. And I warned him. I went, it's the same woman from last night. And he's like, okay, I'm only staying a half hour. Luckily, yeah. My dad had been sleeping because he would have been the one to tell her to shut the fuck up. So, yes, there you go, everyone. I just told you a story about how fun my dad is. And how horrible people are.
But you know, he would have been well within his rights to tell her to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Just saying. But yeah, so he leaves a Hand That Rocks the Cradle laying on the sidewalk, and he just takes off. Now we cut to Paris's car breaking down. She sees Ed coming along and flags him down for help. He agrees to give her a ride. Back at the motel, Larry recognizes Carolyn as that actress, quote unquote. And gives her a
room. Weren't you that actress?
Yes, weren't you that actress? Or didn't you used to be, or something like that?
Yeah.
He said, didn't you used to be that actress?
And she's like, yeah. And then she slides him a 50 to give her his nicest room. But she knows that there's not going to be that many nice rooms, but she wants to make sure it's nicer than the others. And there's like a fat stack of cash in her wallet that Larry's eyeballing.
Mm-hmm.
But we cut back to Ed and Paris. Now we see them stuck in the flooded road. We see another car coming. Ed flags them down, and we meet Ginny and Lou. Ed asks...
Lou! Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, she was frustrated.
They both need to be slapped around. I'm just going to say that.
Oh, absolutely. Because Ed asks for a cell phone, and Lou is just a complete turd to him. He's like, we don't even know you, mister. What are you doing out here? Like, he's just a total jerk. And Ed just flips out at him. And he goes, yeah, I love it because he grabs me. He goes, listen to me, dude. I'm having a really fucked up, really wet, very bad fucking day. He's like, he worked fuck into that a lot. He's like, so I suggest if you or your girl have a cell phone, you give it to me right now. And Lou looks all scared and tells him they don't have a cell phone. So Ed tells him they need to ride in the other direction. Ginny tells him it's flooded that way as well. So they ask for a ride back to the motel, and they agree. Paris hops in while Ed runs back to the limo and grabs a gun from his glove box. So it's like, oh, okay, what's going on there?
And you want to hear her theme song?
Which one, Ginny or Paris?
Paris has a theme song.
Oh, what's that?
One night in Paris and you'll touch her oyster. Every time they said her name, I just thought of One Night in Paris. And then, you know, the One Night in Bangkok from, you know, Chess.
Right. Oh, Lordy. Yeah.
Because what would an episode be if I didn't have a little ditty to sing?
A little ditty about Lou and Ginny?
No, about One Night in Paris.
But it rhymes so well.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it made me sad because you reminded me that Paris Hilton was a thing around this time.
Yep. Which might be why she chose that name.
Oh, I'm sure.
I would like to think that her Christian name is not really Paris.
Paris, Nevada?
Yeah.
I think it is because that's where she was conceived.
Yep. But I love it because as soon as Paris gets in the car, like, Lou is immediately eye-fucking her, like, right in front of Ginny. It's like, Jesus Christ. So they arrive back at the motel and explain what happened. Larry seems less concerned with the flooding and more concerned with whether or not Paris is a hooker. He's like, is she a hooker? He just keeps asking.
Why is... I don't know. If I just saw her standing there, you know, she was just 17... You know what I mean. Like, a lot of women dressed like that in 2003.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't immediately go to, oh, she's one of them sinners.
I want to know, actually, yeah, what is his issue with hookers? Like, because he's, like, really, like, going, no, I don't talk to trash.
Right, and then later we see his room... where he's staying, and there's all those booby magazines, dem titty magazines.
Mm-hmm. But keep in mind the twist.
That's true.
It does make sense if you consider the twist.
That's true.
What a twist.
What a twist. But I think Larry's one of them guys that just assumes all women are hookers.
Yeah, that's true.
I think he's that type.
He's probably still a virgin.
Got any cash? You looking for a good time?
Larry is definitely still a virgin, Maurice. You're 100% correct on that. But Ed asks if there's another way out of the valley, maybe a back road, and Larry tells him, where do you think all the water is coming from? So they're trapped. So Ed goes to check on the Yorks. Paris, Ginny, and Lou are in the lobby with Larry, and Paris is trying to get a room.
I'm just going to keep humming.
Paris is trying to get a room from Larry, and he tells her, we don't rent rooms by the hour. I was like, you're such a dick. And she goes, oh, funny. And she's like, are you still serving food here? And he's like, there's a vending machine around the corner. Go help yourself. He then completely ignores her and turns to Ginny and Lou, telling them the room rates. And Paris calls him out, saying, I was talking to you. I'd appreciate it if you looked at me. And he goes, well, I don't like looking at trash.
He's such a dick. Oh, I hate him.
I mean, he kind of redeems himself later, but yeah, he's a dick.
Oh, yeah.
But we cut to the Yorks. Ed tells George the bad news that they're stuck for the night. He asks to take a look at Alice, and afterward, he asks George if Alice packed a sewing kit. So we're getting little by little information about Ed that he's more than just a limo driver.
Aren't they all?
Well, of course. We cut to Paris, Lou, and Ginny going to their respective rooms. Ginny and Lou end up going into room 6, and when they close the door, the 6 falls, turning into a 9. And I just wrote, nice.
Not for them.
Right, yeah, that's true. And we cut to Ed looking for a sewing kit when suddenly a new car pulls up. We see Larry standing in the rain watching the new car, and then cut to Ginny and Lou. Ginny is unpacking her things, stops and says, Lou, did you feel that? He says, feel what? And Ginny just says, cold. So she's a little weird. We see
the shining.
She's got the shinning.
The shinning.
We see the why was Larry standing out in the rain, by the way? Like,
he was smoking, wasn't he? Was or he eating a piece of candy or something?
I just saw him like standing in the rain looking stupid eyed at the car driving up like another car.
Like, dang, I'm gonna make a lot of money tonight.
Remember, he's hiding something, remember?
True. Yes. True. But it seems a lot more suspicious if you're just standing in the rain rather than, you know, behind the counter. So Officer Rhodes gets out of the car and tells Larry who he is and that he's transporting a convict. And he tells him that while the law gives him the right to refuse them service, the roads are all flooded and he could really use a room. So we cut to Ed asking Rhodes if he has a radio in the car and asks him to call for an ambulance. They try and, of course, can't get anyone. Rhodes tells them that it's been like that for hours. So Ed asks for a first aid kit or even a needle and thread. Larry tells him there's a needle and thread in the diner and he goes to get it.
We meet Bebe Busey.
Yeah. Then we see Rhodes and Bebe Busey being walked to the room by Larry. Now we cut to Ed sewing up Alice's wound. Like, in her, that was gross. Like, he's just sewing up her neck. It was like, duh, no anesthetic, no nothing. But
she obviously didn't feel it.
Yeah. And this part is funny.
She was in the comatose.
The comatose, do you say?
Yep.
I love this, though, because while he's sewing her up, George and Larry are watching in horror. And Larry's just going, I wish I had beige. That would have been so much better if I had beige. Like, he's just like mumbling about beige thread. And then George asks, where did you learn to do that? And Ed's a little vague here. He says, right where you're standing. So it's like, what's going on with Ed?
He's got
he's
a dead
a
mother.
Weird.
Did you say he
used to
mother?
Work. He used to work in the hotel service.
And yes, I did say he has a dead mother.
Nice. So Ed then asks about Timmy, asking if he's okay since he hasn't spoken since the accident. And George tells him it's normally like this, that he doesn't speak much. And he goes, ever since. And he kind of trails off. And then he said Ed had a, or he goes, he basically tells him that he's Ed's stepfather and that his real dad left years ago. And then he just goes temper problems. So we don't know what happened, but we have to assume that, you know, he had an abusive father. So meanwhile, Timmy looks terrified and watches Robert Mayne being walked into his room. So he sees the convict outside. Larry tells Rhodes that the furniture is shit, but if he needs to chain up Robert to something, the toilet's bolted down real good. I love this because...
like, he's real fucking helpful. Like, here. like, how do you know that?
I like that how Baby Busey just turns to him. He's like, oh, thank you so much for your assistance. But Rhodes cuffs Robert to the toilet and gives him one of the worst fake slaps I've ever seen. Like, which makes sense a little while later why it looked so fake. But at, just watching this fresh, it's like, wow, that was a bad fake slap.
Yep.
but he shuts the door and Larry and he and Larry head off to check on Alice. So we see Rhodes checking on Alice and comments that her pulse is weak but steady and all they can do is keep her comfortable. So Ed asks again about the radio, suggesting that they take shifts trying to reach someone. Rhodes tells him no and leaves.
He says, I don't think so.
Yep. And outside we see Paris with her ass in the air at a vending machine struggling to get some food out. We pan back and just see Rhodes staring at her ass.
I mean, can you blame him?
Well, no, not at all.
She does have a nice booty.
I'd say I've always kind of had a crush on Amanda Peet, so yeah. I can't blame him.
But this part is funny, though.
Yeah. She's like, you gonna arrest me, officer? He looks confused. He's like, how'd you do that? How'd you know I was a cop? And then she just points at the car, which is clearly a police vehicle, and he laughs.
Because there's only 10 of you there and 3 vehicles, and you're, she's outside. She can see the difference in the cars.
Exactly. He tries to make small talk with her while creepily leering at her. He's going on about how, you know, Cheetos for dinner, that can't be good. Let's go get some real food. He's talking about how he said he used to work the mess hall in the service, and maybe he can go whip something up in the diner.
Yeah, he worked the mess hall somewhere. It just wasn't in the service, though.
Yeah, exactly.
It was while he was completing his service.
Yes. Ba-dum-bum. She then just asks him for change. And he fishes in his pocket a little too long while never taking his eyes off of her. I was like, that's just creepy.
Well, when you find out later, well, you know why.
Well, yeah.
He hasn't had any while, but... I guess that doesn't really make sense because, well, we'll have to wait till we get to the end.
Yeah, he's only been looking at Baby Busey for a long time. So,
secret lovers.
Oh, God, that's what they are.
That's why Baby Busey does what he does in a little bit.
Yep.
Because he can see out the window. He's not blind, man.
So he gives her the change and asks, you got a name? She goes, Paris. And he goes, Paris, eh? Never been. She goes, well, you're not going tonight. And walks away.
Burn.
I have, and it was way more fun than this movie.
Oh, man. So now we have a montage to see what all the characters are up to. We see Timmy sleeping. George is by Alice's bed, begging her to be strong and saying that he and Timmy need her. We see
Ed needs you.
Ed closes the door to the York's room and then takes some pills. We see Larry in the office hiding paperwork and a photo of a man that's clearly not him. We see Paris checking her luggage, and in her luggage is another bag, and that one's filled with a fuckload of money. Then we cut to Lou and Ginny. Lou is lying on the couch in their room, completely awake but facing away from Ginny, who is in bed calling out for him, and he doesn't answer. He's watching out the window.
Boo! Boo! Oh my god, she's so fucking annoying.
Oh yeah, she's really annoying. We see Robert trying to break the pipe that he's chained to in the on the toilet. We see Rhodes staring at himself in a mirror and walks away from the camera and puts his coat on. Now we see the shirt he's wearing has a blood stain and a hole in the back. So we're like, what the fuck is up with that? And then finally, we see Carolyn in her room bitching in the mirror about her situation. Suddenly, her phone beeps. She grabs it and tries to find a signal. She ends up wrapping herself in a shower curtain and heading outside into the rain, like walking around looking for a signal. And I was like, man, this is a strange period in time for film. Like, cell phones were, you know, pretty much in use heavily at that point, but we still had shit service.
Yep.
So there was a lot
roaming charges?
Yes. But that's the thing, like, this era of horror movies from like about 98 to like 2005, there was always some kind of weird cell phone gimmick. They always had to find a way that, oh, cell phone's out of service.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's
it's the house. It's not the fucking house.
See, now they fall now back. They're just now they're just like, oh, let's do a period piece. This takes place in the 80s. There's no cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
But she heads out wandering the grounds, and she hears a spooky noise and looks, but there's nothing there. We then see a POV shot from the bushes watching her. From the shrubbery. She turns, suddenly someone attacks her, Carolyn screams, we see blood hit the shower curtain, and we cut away to Ed sleeping. He hears a noise, wakes up, and goes off to investigate. He finds the shower curtain rings leading away from the motel. He then hears some clanging and turns toward the laundry room. He heads over to check out who's in there, sees three dryers going, he stops the first two, and continues to hear the thudding. So he goes over to the third, opens it up, and finds Carolyn's severed head in it. And he just calmly says, holy fuck. That line delivery was great.
Yeah.
Haven't we done enough things this month with washers and dryers?
Nope. Well,
now, to be fair, this is technically September. So.
Within the month.
Now, this is now the third dryer scene in a horror movie we've covered. Because
My Bloody Valentine.
Yep, My Bloody Valentine. Actually, wait, no, fourth, because didn't we cover 3D? We did. So My Bloody Valentine, My Bloody Valentine 3D, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, and now Identity. So I think we're covering all the dryer death scenes in horror movies.
That ever were.
Stay out of the laundry room.
Yes, the laundry room means bad juju in horror.
Yes. Don't have clean clothes, ever.
Yes, just be filthy, then you're fine.
Yeah.
Because
let your significant other stand outside while they're admiring your natural musk.
Hey,
I'm just going to bring up, isn't there one in Halloween as well, technically?
I'm trying to think, is there? Well,
he goes out. And she gets locked out there, so she doesn't technically...
True.
Yeah.
It's not a dryer death scene, but yes, a laundry room does
does
bad. Play heavily into it.
Laundry rooms are bad, people. Don't go after your... It's the Tide Pod Challenge all over again. Don't do it.
You know how to keep yourself safe?
What's that?
I think Sandy Puss might have a new seminar coming up.
I heard she does.
How to clean your laundry in the olden days. You beat them on rocks.
Oh, we saw that in the Vavitch.
Yes. You'll only get possessed. And yes. Your whole family will die, but you'll have nice clean clothes.
And
you know, I just heard an advertisement for Sandy Puss. It's at the flea market by Route 11, correct?
Yes. She has her own line of books and does seminars.
I've heard the seminars have helped a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to definitely check these out.
And she also has a VHS of the Month Club.
Oh, awesome. I'll have to do that. And then while I'm there, pick up some ghost jars. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Aunt Mabel's Ghost in a Jar. Those are pretty awesome. I have a little collection going.
I mean, she just got Ed Asner. I'm sorry. Rest in peace too soon. I'm sorry.
All that's left is Sue Ann Nivens, Gordy, and Marie, Murray's wife from the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Everyone else is dead.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
His grandson posted a TikTok of him, of course, that day, and it literally is him. He's like, hey, Grandpa, and he's like, fuck off. People lost their shit. They're like, how dare you post that? He's like, it's my grandfather. And then he went and posted more. He's like, it's just like, who the fuck is Bill Cosby?
That is amazing. Oh, man, I'm going to have to find those on TikTok now.
I'll send them to you. I think there's only like two of them.
Sweet. That's, yeah, for the listeners, me and Dawn are frequently sending videos back and forth on TikTok. It's
That's all we do. That's all we do.
It is an addiction.
I literally today was sitting in my dad's room and I got like six of them and I went, this is either Mike or Davey. Like I knew it was either you or Davey.
Yeah, because last night at work, I'm like, oh, this one's funny. Okay, I got to send it to Don. Okay, I got to send this one to Don. But
back to our regularly scheduled program.
But I love Ed's reaction because it is so calm and collected. And it's like, it's very not what we would expect in a horror movie. But suddenly Rhodes and Larry show up. Larry has a baseball bat and looks terrified. They see Ed and the severed head. And Rhodes goes into reach into the dryer, and Ed asks, "What are you doing?" And Rhodes says, "There's something in there." And Ed hands him a towel, saying, "Use this." And Larry goes, "Are you a cop?" And he goes, "Used to be." So we find out a little bit more about Ed now. Rhodes pulls out a key, and it's room 10. Ed asks, "Was she in room 10?" Larry shakes his head no, and Rhodes tells him, "I am." And he goes, "Where's your guy?" And he goes, "Cuffed to a toilet." So we cut to the three going to check on Robert. They open the bathroom door, see the pipe busted and the window open. Robert is gone. So now we cut to the impromptu hearing from the beginning of the movie that they were talking about. Judge Taylor is pissed and does not want to be there and insists on starting the case, even though Malcolm Rivers isn't present yet. So now we cut back to the motel. And we see
Malcolm is in the middle of the commute, for Petey's sake.
Ba-dum-bum. We cut back to the motel, and the entire group is spazzing out, wanting to know what's going on and why they've been called together for this parlor scene.
And for a family meeting.
Ed tells them that Caroline has been murdered and that the convict that Rhodes was transporting is on the loose. This leads to a complete freak out where everyone starts arguing.
Look, no, we need to talk about Larry in this scene. Because he keeps calling out things. He's like, "That's cop talk for there was someone killed." Or like, "There was a situation." Yeah, that's cop talk for someone lost their head. What the fuck?
Larry is so great in this scene.
Let's just explain it.
Well, I mean, Larry is a dick, but he's kind of a lovable dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're all arguing, and we see Rhodes was outside looking for Robert, but he comes back into the lobby and tells him he's found nothing. Ed is going to go help Rhodes look. Paris wants to go with him, and she can't stand being around Larry, who keeps calling her a hoe. And Ed convinces her to stay and keep everyone calm. So they go room to room, checking and making sure everything is locked up tight. Ed asks Rhodes, "What are we chasing here?" And he tells him multiple homicide. So they split up because, of course, they do.
Movie's got a movie, right, Don?
Oh, of we course. Lost
him. Sorry. No, I'm here. I had a mouthful of food.
But we, so.
Sorry. Sorry. Hold on. That's because movie's got a movie.
Yay. Oh, man. So Rhodes and Ed are checking around the grounds of the motel. We see Timmy is in the bathroom, and Timmy goes to the bathroom, and I love
he's
this.
He's trying to take a poop.
Yeah, and George is like, "I'm going to stand right by the door. I'll be right here." And he looks at the others, and he's like, his mom usually does this. And then we just see this kind of creepy image of Ed in the background looking in the window of the room that they're all in. And I'm like, I feel like this is important, but it never really pops up again.
Yeah.
So I was like, that was just a weird shot. But we cut to Larry being a sneaky sneak looking through someone's luggage. We don't know whose yet, but he's in a dark room rifling through someone's luggage. Then back in the motel room with Ginny, Lou, Paris, and George, we find out that Lou and Ginny got married 9 hours ago. They had a Vegas wedding. And then Ginny spazzes out and wants to leave. She rushes out of the room. Lou follows her, and we find through Lou and her arguing that she's pregnant, and that's why he married her.
Oh, but then Bequeathed. There's like, another. I never was pregnant. I only said that because you were at this place with that bitch. And he's like, wait, what? Right. I was never at any place with any bitch, bitch.
The double bitch. Yeah, he's trying to calm her down. And she, you know, that's when she tells him she's not pregnant. And he's like, then why the fuck did I marry you?
Right. And then she like gets hysterical and locks herself in the bathroom. And right. He's like trying to get her to come out to like talk to her. She's like, go away. Go away. What do you want?
It's so
I'm
like.
I'm not coming out till you calm down. I'm fucking calm.
Oh my God. As beating the door. And I like, this was so high school like drama. It was so bad. But he's pounding on the door. And I love that because he's like. He tells her Allison is a fucking bitch who likes to mess with her head.
Yep.
And I was like, wait a second. She's like Carla from I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yep.
Puppeteering her friends.
But, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Identity is the variant of I still know What You Did Last Summer. Larry is just Jack Black.
We have the murders happening in the rain. Everyone's stuck at a little place. Like, it's not a resort, but it's a motel. We have the dryer death. We have the fucking bitch who's manipulated by her friends. Or manipulating her friends. Like, yeah, this is all coming together.
Yep.
It just needs a tanning bed.
Right. And a hook death. At least one hook death.
Well, but, I mean, Paris was a hooker.
Ah,
they didn't want to keep it. They needed to play it a little further away so as not to, you know, them copyright stuffs.
Yeah, that can get a little janky.
Yeah. And not the janky leg either.
The stanky leg? The janky
leg? Yeah.
But on the other side of the door, Ginny hears footsteps coming in and Lou says, what are you doing here? She then calls out for Lou, but he doesn't answer. She slowly. Her fucking voice, man.
Oh.
And she slowly approaches the door and listens. And suddenly Lou begins pounding on the other side of the door, screaming her name, telling her to open up the door. The door rattles repeatedly. There's a thump and then silence. So
and,
we
and she's like shaking and she's like, Lou. Like Stevie Nicks singing Silent Night.
It sounds like you're sitting on a paint shaker.
Maybe I am, and maybe I am. I'll behave.
Oh, Lordy.
Oh, boy.
So we cut to Ed searching one of the rooms and finding a large hunting knife sheath with no knife. Oh, that's going to come up. And then we cut back to Ginny. She slowly unlocks the door and creeps out of the bathroom to see what happened. She hears the floor creak behind her. She turns, sees a shadow of someone with a raised knife moving toward her, and then runs back in the bathroom again. We don't see the attacker, but they fight with her trying to get the door back open. She screams for help, finally gets the door closed, and latches it shut. She then jumps out the window of the bathroom and turns and runs right into Rhodes. So she tells him he's in her room, like the killer's in her room. Ed and her and Rhodes bust in to check it out. They find dead Lou, but no killer.
Hey, we found you dead Lou.
Lou, are you all right?
Hey, yo, I'm dead. Oh, God.
If you only wouldn't have gone to that place with that other girl, you wouldn't be dead. This is all your fault.
Oh, man. So we cut to Robert running through the rain, trying to get away from the motel. And in the distance, he sees some other buildings with their lights on. So he starts making his way there. We see him break into a closed diner and then goes into the diner and looks around. He looks out one of the windows and sees the same motel he just ran away from, complete with Ed walking around holding his gun out looking for him. So he just goes, what the hell? Like, you know, and again, very apt line, because I said the same thing the first time I saw this.
I said it yesterday, too, because it's been so long since I've seen the movie. I'm like, wait a second. It looked like he was running a real far place there.
Something's not right here. So Ed spots Robert in the window.
Peekaboo!
I'm sorry, just in my head, I was like, how much is that convict in the window?
Rough.
But the one with the Busey-like grin.
Oh, God. We got to get Silver Bullet on here just to get some actual Busey on here.
His daddy thinks that he's Jerry Lee Lewis. And I do think his daddy's insane.
Oh.
I know from firsthand experience that yes, he is.
Oh,
I'll tell that story one day.
Yeah, we still got to do a Patreon special where you just tell a bunch of your convention stories.
Yes.
I only have a picture with Gary Busey because he photobombed it.
That's kind of awesome, though.
Which was good because I found out he was charging like $20 for a picture with him. I was like, okay, cool. Just the autograph, please. All right, moving back to the movie.
So Ed spots Robert in the window, and then Robert turns to run.
And I'm still thinking of how much is that convict in the window.
I love three packs of cigarettes.
Well, yeah, it's prison money. So he turns to run, and then Rhodes is right there and just punches him in the face. The two fight, Ed comes in to assist, and pistol whips the shit out of Robert. And then Ed and Rhodes continue to pummel him into the ground. We cut to Rhodes and Ed tying Robert up and assign Larry to guard duty, who protests he's not comfortable with them keeping him in the diner, and he's not comfortable with guard duty. So I was like, you know, he's acting a little suspicious here. But I love Ed's line, because he's like, I'm not comfortable with guard duty. Larry says, I'm not comfortable with guard duty. And Ed turns to him and goes, he's unconscious, Larry. He's tied to a post. Like, just the way he says that is fantastic. But so, yeah, Larry seems a little nervous about this situation. Now, Ed tells Larry to watch Robert and then tells Paris to go back to room 3 and watch Ginny. Now we cut to Alice waking up. George and Timmy rush to her bedside. We see Paris asking George to watch Ginny for a moment, and he tells her that Alice is awake and he has to take care of her. So Paris tells Ginny to wait there, and she's got to go get something out of her room. So she takes off down to her room. We see Larry kind of watching her while she goes. And then we see Larry looking nervous, looking around the diner, and he kind of tries to close the latch on the freezer. And this is where Robert pipes up going, what's wrong? What's in the fridge? Larry tells him to shut up, and Robert just keeps taunting him. What's in the fridge?
What's in the fridge?
He goes, it's okay. You can tell me. I'm good at keeping secrets. I got a Whopper myself. So get away from that.
I wonder what that secret is.
Oh, we'll find out soon.
It's who his daddy is.
No, there's no hiding them.
I'm so glad I muted it so I could take a drink, because now I'm choking.
We cut to Paris in her room grabbing her money out of her bag. She turns right into Ed, who's standing there behind her, scares the shit out of her. The two argue briefly, and she's like, because he's like, what are you doing here? I told you to stay in room 3. And she's like, I had to get some of my things. He's like, why are you over here? And she tells him that, you know, he's not a cop anymore and doesn't need to worry about it. She goes, there's a real live active duty cop outside. And Ed goes, the one who managed to lose a convicted killer. And she just stops and goes, you're a complicated cat, Edward.
Like, I love that line.
Me too. And so she starts to ask him, because she's like, he goes, I don't think so. She goes, I do. And she asks him what month he was born. He says May. And she goes, Taurus. And then nods and says, same as me. which will come into play in a little bit.
So Chekhov's birthday.
I mean, you're not wrong. So we cut to Ed taking photos of the crime scene where Lou was killed, while Paris asks him questions about when he was a cop. We find out that he was a cop in L.A. and took medical leave because his job was making him sick. He just couldn't do it anymore. We get he tells her a story about a young pregnant girl with AIDS who was going to jump off of a building. I said she was on the ledge threatening to jump, and he tried to stop her, and she asked him why should she live. And Ed goes on to say he was trained to say a lot of things, her dreams, all the people that would miss her. But for a second, he hesitated, as he couldn't think of a single optimistic thing to say to her. She saw the hesitation, spread her arms, and jumped. After that, he started getting the headaches and eventually started blacking out. So he went on medical leave and never went back to the force. So we see Ed is taking photos of Lou. The whole time he's telling the story, he's taking photos of Lou. And he sees something in Lou's hands, grabs a newspaper, and uses it to get the something out. And we find out it's the room key. It's number 9. So Ed leaves the room and calls out to Rhodes. Rhodes is standing by the radio telling him that it's worse. There's even more static now. He can't reach anybody. Ed asks for the room key that was found on Carolyn, and we see it's number 10. He then shows him the key that he found on Lou, and Paris comments as it's some kind of a countdown. So they then spot Larry coming out of the motel office instead of being on guard duty in the diner. I love this because Larry looks shifty as fuck, and Ed's like, what are you doing there, Larry? What are you doing? Come here. What are you doing, Larry? It reminded me of To Catch a Predator. What are you doing here? How'd you have a seat right there? Like,
I was going to come play video games.
I had this pizza. I needed to share it with somebody.
Yeah. The person online said I play video games and want a pizza. So I came over.
So Ed calls him out for not being on guard duty, and Larry tells him that he had to get something out of his office. Ed asks how many sets of keys there are, and he tells him two and a master set. And while they're talking, Rhodes walks into the diner, looks shocked as fuck, and says, "Oh my fucking god!" The others go in and see dead Robert with Larry's baseball bat jammed down his throat. I couldn't say that.
He was hungry, and he needed some fiber. He was also a little bit bound.
He's also used to taking it down the shit. Never mind.
Oh, no, I didn't even think of that.
That bat was a little small.
Oh, my.
So Rhodes starts screaming at him, wanting to know why he killed him. Ed is screaming that he's like, why did you leave? What did you do? And Ed's like, I didn't do nothing. I didn't kill him. And then Ed tells Paris to shut the doors. So they're basically grilling Larry back and forth. And Rhodes sees a key next to Robert and picks it up. It's number 8. Rhodes asks Larry, is this your key? 8, 10, 9, 8, huh? He's like yelling at him. Larry gets frustrated going, those aren't my keys. And he drops the tackle box he was carrying from the office, pulls the keys out, saying that these are my keys. And he's shaking them at him. Ed bends down to investigate the dropped tackle box and sees Carolyn's wallet and a whole lot of money. So Larry admits to taking her wallet, but insists it was after she was dead. He didn't kill her. Suddenly he grabs Paris, holds a switchblade to her throat, and is like, back off, motherfuckers.
Right? Because, I mean, that's what sensible people do.
Well, and I love this shot because Ed and Rhodes both pull their guns, and this whole thing reminded me of From Dusk Till Dawn. It was very much like the Gecko brothers standing there holding their guns on freaking, what's his name, Pete or whatever, the same guy, you know, the oh my god, the liquor store guy.
Oh, yeah.
Exact same guy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was Larry Hawk, or Larry Hawk, god. John Hawks playing Larry. But yeah, he's like, it was very reminiscent. I'm like,
I never said hell, boss.
Right, because he's like, I didn't kill her. It was funny. But Larry tells him he didn't kill anyone, and that if they don't back up, he hasn't killed anyone yet, but if they don't back up, he really doesn't like cheap fucking whores, and he's basically like threatening to cut her throat. Paris elbows him in the gut. They fall backward into the kitchen, crashing into the fridge. Larry drops his knife. Paris goes to stand up, opening the fridge in the process, and the frozen body of Vladimir Putin falls out.
We have our Goonies moment.
Yep.
tell me that guy didn't look like Putin. And he just, like, his face cracks when he hits the ground. Paris spazzes out. Ed and Rhodes help her up, and then they look to see Larry, and he's gone. He just took the fuck off. He's like, bye. We cut to Larry getting in his truck and trying to get it started. Ed and Rhodes run out trying to stop him, gets the car started, and drives past them. Suddenly, George screams, and we see that Timmy is standing in the path of the truck. George runs out trying to save Timmy. Larry veers, hits George, and crashes into a wall, killing George. So, bye-bye, Scrubs.
Guess what? They have to scrub off the wall. Boom. Yeah.
I don't want no scrub. Scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me.
So, we cut back to the hearing, and the defense is arguing that Malcolm is an Axis IV dissociative, and to this day is unaware of the crimes in which he was convicted. He cites that in 1986, the United States Supreme Court ruled decisively that states cannot execute a person who does not understand why they're being put to death. They argue that he signed a confession. The defense then produces Malcolm's journals that were withheld evidence. The judge thumbs through them and sees several different writing styles. Malik tells the judge that there's no universally efficacious treatment for dissociative identity disorder, that in theory, one must attempt to move the patient, move the patient toward integration, a folding of the fractured psyche. So we see some officers interrupt the hearing, and they tell him that Malcolm has arrived. Now we see officers wheeling him in, strapped to a wheelchair. So we get that little side story that's going on.
But that's not how that even works.
What's that?
I'm not an expert on DID. This actually comes from TikTok. Sorry. I do follow a couple of them on there. They are aware of the other, you know, alters in their body. It's not like I had no idea about these other people. One's a murderer. Like I said, I'm not an expert, but the majority are aware and actually know each, like, inside the head. They actually talk to each other all the time.
See, and that's the thing, like, I don't really know much about the actual disorders, but I know Jess does, and I think that's the reason she wasn't as big a fan of this movie as I was.
Yeah, like I said, I follow a couple of them, and they're all aware, like, all the alters are aware of each other, and actually, one's really funny, like, they literally, one alter will come out and make fun of the other alter, and then the other alter will come out and go, hey!
Well, and that's kind of how it was in... That's kind of how it was in Split.
Yes.
You know, so where they were all aware of each other.
Yes.
But, yes. So yeah, this...
They're not all psychopaths.
Well, I know this one and High Tension, which is another one I really like that Jess couldn't stand. Jess was very annoyed with how that panned out. So we cut to Rhodes and Ed tying up Larry while he pleads to them, telling them that he didn't kill anybody. And he says, George was an accident. They tell him, there was a body in your freezer, Larry. Like, that's just, again, I love Ed's lines. And he goes, I found him like that. And now we get Larry's backstory. He tells him that he lost everything in Vegas. He was headed west, stopped at this motel because he was almost out of gas and had nowhere else to go. Found the clerk dead in a, what do you say, like a something pot pie?
Pot pie, because they repeat it right. A banquet pot pie? A banquet pot pie?
Did you say a banquet pot pie?
I think somebody had some product placement somehow.
Banquet was like, yeah, you can have a corpse in our pie. It's cool.
just get our name out there.
Yeah, just keep saying our name.
Say my name. When corpses are around you, chicken, it will love you.
Oh, God. You know, I'm going to have
to... I'm on a roll today. This is all, like, off the cuff, guys.
I'm going to have to do a Susie Sings Volume 2 and go through all the episodes since our first anniversary. Oh, man. But we find out he finds the clerk dead, and just then a guest arrives to rent a room. You know, Larry had no money, so he took the guy's money and gave him a room. Basically, he decided to play motel manager, and he said he was just going to wait for their the dead man's family to arrive, and he goes to pick up the dead Larry. His name was Larry too, by the way. I like how he just slips that in there.
Yeah,
no coincidence,
right? And he goes, I put him in the freezer because it was hot out. I figured that was the best place for him. I figured they would come for him soon, but then they never did. So I just continued to do what I was doing. Rhodes calls.
You know, what a shitty family, though. Like, nobody calls to check on Grandpa, who runs a hotel in the middle of Nevada. Like, nobody.
The last time they checked on him, he had his chicken pot pie. They thought he was okay.
Like, oh, Grandpa, did you get your shipment of banquet chicken pot pies?
You're good for the next 6 months? All right. We'll talk to you later.
I mean, a little behind the scenes without saying anything about where I work. One of my jobs is to write up, like, death information for the medical record department. And we keep that information until the person is picked up by the funeral home. And there have been times where we've had bodies in the morgue for, like, upwards of half a month. Because no
you
one...
You have to write down how many chicken pot banquet chicken pot pies they have to eat?
No, thankfully. But, but yeah, but I mean, the idea of, like, people not coming to check on someone who's passed, like, unfortunately, it's more realistic than I want to, I wanted to believe before working there. So, yeah, it's pretty rough. So that part I found believable. I'm like, yeah, well, people suck. But so Rhodes calls bullshit on it, and everyone else thinks Larry might be telling the truth, that his story is just so crazy it might be true, and that the killer could possibly still be out there. And then Ginny suggests maybe it's the burial ground. Like, she just comes out of nowhere with maybe it's the burial ground. And they're all like, say what now?
Yeah, like, yeah. Where'd that come from?
She's exactly, like, y'all saw Poltergeist, right?
Like, it was my chair, opinion, sorry.
Like, this is another twist they were trying to throw in. Like, hey, right hand on burial ground.
Mama.
Exactly.
Next, it will be the other guy is the killer on green.
Well, she tells them all about a brochure that she read in the lobby that talked about Native Americans that were moved there by the government, and they all died because there was no water.
So, and I love it's the Trail of Tears.
But I love Rhodes' reaction, because he goes, and what? Now they're coming back to life like sea monkeys?
Yeah.
That was fantastic. So Ed tells him to calm down, and Rhodes flips out, telling him that he's not running the show here. He goes on to tell everyone the new plan, says they're all just going to sit there in that room and not do anything. If Larry tries something, he's going to shoot him. If anyone comes in from outside, he'll shoot them too. And if anyone tries to do anything, he'll shoot them. It's like, solid plan.
Yeah.
Who could argue with that?
I want to add here, that is in true Ray Liotta form. That is Totes Liotes.
Oh, I love that. Totes Liotes.
It really is.
I can't take credit for that. I heard that from somewhere.
Oh.
But they close the door to the lobby, and then the lights start to flicker. We see some time pass, and all of them are just kind of sitting around the room looking bored. The lights are continuing to flicker. Timmy gets up to go in the bedroom with his mom, and Ginny brings up an old movie where 10 strangers go to an island and one by one are killed off, and they find out throughout the movie that there was a connection between all of them. So Larry pipes up and goes,
foot on red!
Larry pipes up and goes, maybe y'all pissed off the wrong guy. And Rhodes yells at him to shut up. So then Ginny tells them that there's a connection between them. And Ed asks, like, what? So now they, you know, basically ask each other a bunch of questions, like, where were you going? Where are you from? Blah, blah, blah. We find out a little bit here that Larry and Paris are both from Florida, and that she was on her way back, that she bought an orange and lime grove in her home county. And then we see Timmy come back in from seeing his mom and lay back down in the bed. Rhodes hears something in Alice's room and goes to check on her, and he finds her dead. So he calls Ed in there. Then Paris and Timmy come in and look as well. Timmy sees his dead mom and begins crying. Ed tells Paris to get the kid out of here. And then Rhodes looks down and discovers a key under her bed. It's number 6. So Ed tells Rhodes, this doesn't make any sense. This was an accident. Paris pipes up saying George was an accident too, if you believe Larry. And then she goes, where's number 7? So we cut to Paris and Ed backing up Larry's truck. I like the fact that they never backed it up. They just left George pinned to the wall.
Well, I mean, it was raining and it's not like he's going to go anywhere.
Well, but I mean, did anyone even check to make sure he was dead yet? Like, or they were just like, ah, he's dead. Leave him there.
I mean, maybe could he really have still been alive?
I don't know. There's been subways that have pinned people and their insides were held together by the subway.
Oh, you're so optimistic.
We're going to go back to M. Night Shyamalan here and look at Signs. She was pinned up against a tree and was alive until they moved the car.
Yep. Didn't that also happen in the Mothman Prophecies?
I don't know, but I remember in one of the scary movies, because she's like, don't have sex after I die. Yeah, you're talking gibberish. You're talking, No fucking!
So they back up the truck and drop George to the ground. And then we see Rhodes fishing through George's pockets and finds the number 7 key on him. So Paris starts saying how that's impossible. No one could have known George would run out like that. And that Larry would have hit him. Ginny pipes up saying, no one human. Rhodes flips out saying, maybe the ghost of the guy in the freezer gave George the key.
Left foot on yellow.
Putin's ghost gave George a key. So Ed tells Paris and Ginny to take Timmy and get in Ginny's car and just start driving. When they hit the flooded section, turn around and drive the other way. Just keep
take
driving.
Take Timmy.
Take Timmy. But basically just drive back and forth along the road, you know, for the rest of the night. Stay safe. And Larry starts hollering that they can't leave. And then Rhodes jumps in all pissed off that they're trying to leave as well. Ed tells them they need to be safe. And Rhodes tells them that he can't let suspects leave after 4 people have been killed. Ed argues, do you really think they're suspects? And he goes, do you really think they're suspects, Rhodes? Because I sure don't. And then Ginny and Timmy run past them and go to the car around the corner while they argue.
The car just fucking explodes.
Yes. And I could not stop laughing. I had to pause the movie because it's so fucking random.
Yeah.
Ed, Rhodes, and Paris run over to check on the car. It's just fucking flaming. So Rhodes runs back inside to get an extinguisher. The explosion knocked Larry over, who got out of his ties, and then also grabs an extinguisher and goes and helps Rhodes put out the fire. So they extinguish the car, but there's nobody inside. Rhodes flips on Ed, telling him, you did this. You got them in the car. And then he storms off. We cut to Rhodes standing in front of Larry's wrecked truck where the body of George should be. And there's nothing. So his body is completely gone. The others look around in complete confusion. So they go into the diner to check on Robert's body, but only find the baseball bat. They check on Lou. He's gone. Carolyn, Alice, all of them, all traces are gone. Suddenly the door slams behind him in the lobby. Rhodes goes and checks outside and there's nothing. So who the hell slammed the door? And this is where Paris has her I know what you did last summer moment and flips out yelling at the sky outside.
Who are you? What do you want?
And then she goes, I'm turning 30 next week. I just want to go home and grow oranges.
What are you waiting for?
And Larry pipes up going, it's your birthday next week? He goes, it's my birthday next week, the 10th. And then Paris comments, me too. Then Rhodes, and then Ed just goes, yeah. So we cut to Larry looking through the photocopies of everyone's license, and he sees that they were all born on May 10th. So the building is suddenly struck by lightning, cutting off the power. Rhodes goes off to find the fuse box. So Ed continues looking at the licenses, I cannot say that. And sees that all of the names are based on locations. Ginny, Virginia. Lou, Louisiana. Carolyn from Carolina. George, York. Paris, Nevada. Larry, Washington. Rhodes, Rhode Island. And Ed, Dakota. He then begins rubbing his forehead as if he has a headache again. and starts to recite the poem from the beginning. When I was going up the stair, I met a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. I wish he'd go away. So he hears a voice in his head say, "Who is this? Who am I speaking to now?" And he looks around confused, shakes his head back and forth, and suddenly he's in a well-lit room with Dr. Malik and the others. Dr. Malik tells him that he missed his appointment, and Ed asks, "Did I black out again?" Then Malik says, "Where have you been?" Ed tells him about driving Carolyn, you know, driving the actress. They get stuck at a motel, talks about the accident, all that, the storm, the murders, the bodies disappearing, everything. So everyone in the hearing is looking at him like, what the fuck are they watching? Mm-hmm. And Malik says, "I'd like to show you a picture." And he shows the rest of the room, like he shows the picture to the rest of the room, then turns and shows it to Ed. And it's a picture of Malcolm. He asks if he knows who this is, who this person is. Ed tells him no. Malik explains he's a man with a very troubled past and explains about the murders. The detective throws some murder photos in front of him. Ed looks confused. Malik explains about the multiple personality disorder. And then Ed finally asks, "Why are you telling me all of this?" And Malik tells him that he's one of Malcolm's personalities. Of course, Ed doesn't believe him. So Malik pulls out a mirror and lets him look at himself. He sees Malcolm's reflection looking back at him and freaks out, going, "What did you do to my face? Where's my face?"
I'm talking to the man in the mirror.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like, they're aware they don't look like themselves.
Right.
Like, so, yeah. Just point that out, people.
That, I mean, they're going to do a little hand wavy in a moment because they try to explain it away with a procedure being done. But, you know, that's, again, I always forget his freaking name, but Pruitt, his acting ability, he's really good. So, like, when he freaked out like that, it was awesome. But he's freaking out. Malik explains to him that everyone he met tonight were personalities created by Malcolm when he was a child. They're all based on things he knew. That's why the names were all after states, and they all share the same birthday. None of it is real. Malik goes on to explain that Malcolm is in the middle of a medical procedure that forces his personalities to confront each other, and that he knew that there would be violence and that the number of personalities would be reduced. Ed starts to fade back to the motel, but Malik keeps him there for a moment and tells him that 4 years ago, one of those personalities murdered a bunch of people, and that that personality cannot escape. That Malcolm has 19 hours until he'll be put to death unless they can convince the judge that the murderer is gone for good. Ed flashes back to the motel with this new knowledge.
You said Malcolm in the middle.
Yep.
I did. All,
there is some truth in this one here, because most DIDs are formed with a trauma from a child experience.
Right.
But it is stuff like that. It is stuff like where they will have stuff like state names. Like,
right.
So that's not too far off.
But yeah, I'm assuming that they're trying to say, like, the whole medical procedure, the experimental medical procedure is how this is all working out. You know, little handy.
Read half a book.
Yeah. But we see Rhodes trying to fix the fuse box with Larry's help. Paris goes to check on Rhodes' car and sees that it's hot wired. And I'm like, why should it be hot wired? Because it still doesn't make sense even after we get this little backstory right here. She then checks the glove box and finds the arrest records for both Robert and Rhodes. So we get a quick flashback scene of Rhodes and Robert being transported. Rhodes stabs a shank through the seat of the officer and into his back. So they, you know, the car veers off the road and crashes. He then steals the officer's clothes, stashes the body in the trunk, and acts as if he's the officer transporting Robert. So I'm like, why would he have hot-wired the car? Why wouldn't he? I mean, he took the guy's clothes. Why wouldn't he just take the car keys?
Like, I assumed it was the radio, actually, that he ripped out the radio.
Oh, maybe it was. Okay, it looked like it was hanging right below the steering column. That's why I was like, did he hot-wire it? But that makes a lot more sense, that if he ripped out...
Or the murderer ripped out the radio, is maybe...
Well, no, because later on, it shows that there's no radio there, and there's just wires.
Okay.
That's right.
All right, so yeah, I missed that part then. But yeah, so she realizes, like, something's wrong here, and she goes to check the trunk and sees the corpse there. So she quietly calls out to Larry, but he doesn't hear. However, Rhodes does. So Paris goes looking for Ed and trying to get help. She hears Larry calling out.
Larry! Like, you are 100 feet away from him. You need to be a little bit louder.
Right. And if you weren't so suspicious, you know, Rhodes might not have thought something was up.
Right.
She then hears Larry calling out for her and goes running to look for him. Suddenly, Rhodes pops up behind her and she screams. He tells her to give him the truck keys. And then Larry pops up behind him and clonks him on the head with a fire extinguisher. So I'm like, oh, Larry kind of redeemed himself here. So down goes Rhodes. And then Paris thanks him and tells him they need to find Ed because he has the keys to the truck. Larry then throws the spare keys to her, saying, you know, he keeps the spare behind the counter. And then he goes to grab the gun out of Rhodes' hand. Rhodes wakes up, shoots Larry twice, holds the gun on Paris, telling her to give him the keys. You know, she runs, he shoots and misses. She tries to get in the truck, but he follows, shooting her and repeatedly missing. She runs and hides. Rhodes gives chase. Dun, dun, dun.
But he's not naked and dickless like Georgie.
No. It's not a naked dickless chase this time.
Right.
Paris runs into Ed, who tells her to stay there, and then he tells her it's all going to be okay. Ed goes to confront Rhodes. Rhodes tells him to throw him the keys to the truck. Ed says nothing and comes towards him. Rhodes pulls his gun and tells him to stay there. Ed pulls his gun, and they just start shooting at each other, both staggering back. Rhodes shoots Ed two more times. Ed just runs up, grabs Rhodes, and empties his clip into him, killing him. Ed then falls down. So Paris runs over trying to help him, but he's dying. You know, he's giving up. She begs him to let her help him. And she asks him, where did you go? What did you see? He tells her that he saw her in an orange grove. And Ed's giving her the chance to be the dominant personality. So we cut out to Malcolm talking as if he were the two personalities in the hearing while everyone watches. Back in the motel the next morning, the storm has passed. We see Paris in the pickup truck leaving. Back to the hearing.
You know why the storm has passed, right? Because John Cusack is dead. He gets rained on more than anybody else in movies. It's a fact. Look it up.
I mean, yeah, you're probably not wrong now that I'm thinking about all of his movies.
No, seriously, it is a fact. Look it up. People have counted that he gets rained on more than anybody else.
That's funny. But back to the hearing, it's now morning there, and Malik is presenting the case to whether convict the body or the mind. He argues that the body that committed those murders is very much here, but the person inside is not. So the judge rules to stay the order of execution and transfers Malcolm Rivers to the state psychiatric hospital under the care of Dr. Malik. We see Malcolm being transferred back to the hospital. We cut to Paris arriving at her orange grove, singing some Bob Dylan, and we fade out to see Malcolm in the back of the transport singing the same song. We see Paris at her home in Florida tending to her trees. She begins digging in the dirt and finds a motel room key. It's room number one. She looks up terrified and sees Timmy standing there with a gardening claw looking menacing. We then get a quick montage flashback of Timmy being responsible for all the murders at the motel. And then back in the transport, Malcolm starts begging, no, please. Malik asks him what's wrong and opens the cage between them like a fucking dumbass. I was like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah, he had this coming to him. That was not smart.
No, that was like the dumbest thing he could have possibly done. Malcolm yells, whores don't get a second chance, and throws his shackles around Dr. Octopus's throat and just chokes him out. And at the same time, we see Timmy killing Paris in his mind. So we see the transport veer off the road, and then we hear Timmy in a whisper say, when I was going up the stairs, I met a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. I wish he'd go away. Cut to black, credits roll, the end. So
the end.
I mean, I still think it's a really fun movie. Like, it's,
I agree.
It's definitely flawed. You know, as Dawn has pointed out, like, it's not medically accurate. Not like the Human Centipede, which, remember, is 100% medically accurate.
Obviously. I never said that. I thought that was a documentary. And it's not that I don't like Identity. I do like this movie. I do. But it's just that I watched it critically and I was like, oh, are you fucking kidding me? Like, like, God damn it. No, not M. Night Shyamalan. Okay.
Right. But yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it definitely relies a little heavily on the audience not knowing anything about the actual disorders, which worked to, you know, to my credit, because I didn't. So, but like to someone like you or my wife who actually read into these things, they're like, this is not right. So I can definitely understand people not digging it for that reason.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not an expert on that. I could be completely wrong. This could be one form of it. But as far as everything I've ever seen has been like, they all know each other. You know,
right.
It's like they all like literally are in a room and a head and waiting just to come forward whenever they feel like it.
Well, right. And that's kind of how it was explained in Split, where it's like, yeah. You know, they had the light was on them, like the spotlight was on which personality, like they were all sitting around together waiting for their turn to speak.
Yeah.
So. But
which
really,
I've heard is way more accurate.
Yeah. Really not a lot of trivia at all. That there were apparently several endings filmed in order to shroud the real one in secrecy. I'm going to have to check my DVD and see if there's
extra features.
Yeah, because I don't recall watching several endings on it, but it's been a long time since I busted out the DVD. Last time I watched this was while streaming. And then again, just now renting it. So, but yeah.
You rented it? It was on Pluto. Pluto TV had it for free, yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't even realize. I just grabbed it on Amazon. I was like, whatever. But to be fair, I also had a $2 credit for, you know, streaming stuff. So it was like 99 cents.
Yeah, I was going to say that you only paid a buck.
Yeah.
By the way, I believe from what I'm looking here, it has been over 30 movies that John Cusack gets rained on.
That's crazy.
That I don't think is accurate either, because this is from like a few years ago.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I think he gets rained on in The Cell, because that's the last Cusack movie before this that I watched. Which, oh, man. Have you guys seen that movie? Like, I know we're not talking about The Cell, but have you guys seen that?
When you say The Cell, I think of the Vincent D'Onofrio and J-Lo movie.
You're right. I'm sorry. It's just Cell. You know,
no, I haven't seen that.
Is that the one? Like, I'm thinking I saw the ending of it, where it was just a bunch of people who became zombies and were walking in a circle.
Yeah, which is not at all how the book ends.
Okay, because, like, yeah, I only saw that ending part. That was literally all I saw.
See, here's the thing. The book got a lot of crap because it came out in the height of, like, mid-2000s zombie, like, just zombie everything, where it was like, you know, The Walking Dead was the popular show on TV. There was friggin' zombie video games everywhere, zombie comic books everywhere, you know, zombie movies galore. And then Stephen King puts out a zombie book. And
I wonder,
like,
why,
oh,
I'm sick of zombies.
Right. but this, I mean, I thought it was a really good story. It wasn't long. It's one of those books you can knock out in like a sitting. It just, I really enjoyed it. And I was looking forward to the movie because I'm like, it's John Cusack and Sam Jackson. Like, how can this be bad? And they were fantastic in it. What they changed from the book to do the movie was god awful. And I was like, oh, man, you know, it had so much potential. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that was a bit of a bummer. Much like many Stephen King books, the movie is a fun ride up to about the end. The last act of the movie, everything falls apart. So,
which is funny because I think that's all I've ever seen of the movie is that last end. Is the end.
The first chunk is enjoyable. You know, it's cheesy, but it's enjoyable. But yeah, so we're not talking about Cell. We're talking about Identity. Anyone have any final thoughts on this of our first whodunit films?
No, I just think it's a fine film.
A fine film.
More so whodunit.
Well, apparently Timmy, but it wasn't really Timmy. It was Malcolm. Malcolm piloting Timmy.
Malcolm in the middle of all of it.
Yep.
No.
Because you know what? You're not the boss of me now.
I did see that, nothing has to do with what I think, I saw that Greg Nicotero was part of the puppeteering in this? Speaking of puppets.
Wait.
There was puppeteering in this movie?
Yeah, that's why I can't figure out. But yeah, it said Greg Nicotero. It said puppeteering.
It probably had to do with like maybe like the more of like the blood. Like if the blood, you know, how she got the cut on the neck and blood was kind of coming out. It may have been.
Maybe. Yeah. But yeah, he had a credit in this, so.
I didn't even see that. Huh. Well, he's involved in everything.
Or maybe he's the one who killed Lou. Who knows?
Maybe. I recommend the movie if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, no, I still think it's a fun ride. It's flawed, like we said, but it's fun. But Dawn, any last words on this movie?
I love my dog. My dog barking in the background, or the toaster, because I was making myself a tuna fish sandwich in the middle of this episode, people.
I was a little behind the scenes.
Yeah. I also took the dog out for a walk, so who knows?
I actually didn't hear anything, so.
And I painted the house, guys. Just so you know. Yeah. Wow. I did all that while we were filming.
That is some fantastic multitasking, I must right? say.
Mm-hmm. That really right? is.
I got to get all this done while my dad's not home.
Well, for those of you not following us on the social medias, we are The Boogeyman's Closet on both Facebook and Instagram, and Maurice handles our Twitter. And what is that, good sir?
At Boogeyman's The.
Thank you very much. We're still doing our giveaways. I am actually, by the time you hear this, the August giveaway will be posted, or the winner for the August giveaway will be posted, and the September giveaway should be up. Which has
some awesome stuff.
It really does. This, we got some great donations this month. And
some actual theater, like movie theater things coming to you guys.
Yeah, we actually have, if only we had something themed around Club Dread, because we have something themed around the other three.
I wish I did. They stole it. And I will tell that story when Club Dread comes around, people. Sorry.
But yes, so definitely follow us on social media for a chance to check that out, because this month is going to be a giveaway you don't want to miss. We also have a Patreon for those of you not following us on there. It's Boogeyman's Closet on Patreon. For $3 a month, you get all of these episodes unedited, as well as one special episode every month that will only be found there. Right now, yes. We're kind of
come be other listeners besides me, Omay, Strasburg, and Hibbard.
Oh, there's a few others.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's for those of you not following the $3 a month thing, will get you all of our audio content. But we're doing a special feature right now for the $6 and up tiers. You can get, for this month only, you can get all of the previous month's exclusive prints, because you get a print sent in the mail. So you can get, instead of getting the one print, you'll get all four. But
I need to upgrade.
And you won't get them anymore after that. They're going to disappear. But yeah, so check that out if you guys are interested. And our next episode will be episode 110. I can't believe we're already up there. But it's going to be Saw. So that should be interesting.
Good work. Good work, everybody.
Well, thank you, Dawn, for joining us. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, I want to thank my dog for just staring at me this whole time and trying to keep me occupied while trying to keep it quiet for you guys.
Well, and we will be seeing you again soon.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Maybe in 2 weeks.
Possibly.
More. Probably. More than likely. Hell, you may even see me next week. Who knows? It's me. I just pop up everywhere.
Indubitably. But all right, guys, so I guess we'll wrap things up here. And as always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
Banquet pot pies.
It's Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.